On this week's 51%, an outdoor co-op puts women front and center.
You know, the outdoor way of life is still dominated by male imagery. The heroes and stories are all about men. And so we're trying to change that.
We hear why the job market is tough for military spouses, who mainly are women, and hear why pregnant women with opioid addictions have trouble finding doctors. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. Outdoor co-op REI CEO and President Jerry Strisky earlier this year announced the launch of an effort to promote gender equity in the outdoors. WTIP's CJ Heidoff spoke with REI Bloomington, Minnesota flagship store manager Brian Harrow about the new effort called Force of Nature, what REI is trying to achieve, and why it's important.
It's really a movement that REI started this year, but it's based on, you know, our belief that I think something that Jerry, our CEO, I found a quote that he said that really kind of sums up how we're feeling about it. And he said, everyone should expect to get the same level of expert service, gear, and experiences, and all our industry needs to get better at doing that. And so for us, it's really about resetting perceptions of how women are viewed in the outdoors. Mm-hmm. We want to challenge the prevailing gender stereotypes that are still out there. We really want to create the largest level playing field in the world, and that's really in the outdoors. And, you know, the outdoor way of life is still dominated by male imagery. It's the heroes and stories are all about men. And so we're trying to change that, and Force of Nature is really this movement to get it started.
So can you tell me who were some of the instigators of this idea at REI?
Well, it really came from our leadership team, and obviously, you know, when you have a great CEO in Jerry Strisky, but it started even before that with Sally Jewell, who was our previous CEO and who went on to become the Secretary of the Interior under the Obama administration. And so, you know, this is something that we've been working on for years. It sort of coalesced into Force of Nature this year, but really amongst our leadership team, almost half of which are women in those senior roles, they decided that this was something that we really needed to lean into, pay a lot of attention to, and then just kind of put on the front burner for this year.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think it's so important right now?
Well, I mean, women make up half of our population. And for us, we just see them as the biggest underserved portion of the population that is still experiencing difficulty in getting into the outdoors. So it made sense to us. When half of the population is still seeing some of these barriers and obstacles, to reach out to them first.
Mm-hmm. So I was reading through some of the literature on this, and a phrase caught my attention that just sums things up really well, I think. The whole pink it and shrink it, where the outdoor industry, you know, they would design equipment for men and then just make it smaller or put, you know, feminine colors on it and call it women's gear. Talk to us more
exactly
about that and some of the partners that you're working with now to improve that.
Well, I mean, I was raised in the outdoors myself, and I can think of the things that my mom used to have to wear and the gear that she used. She was a rock climber and skier and bicyclist and still is at 80 years old. And the gear that, you know, women had to wear back in the 60s and 70s when I was growing up was basically men's gear. Mm-hmm. And it didn't fit right. It didn't look right. And not a lot changed, you know, until fairly recently, where you had more women who were working on design teams. And with REI, that hasn't been any different. We have a huge design team where we make our own gear, where many, many women are giving the feedback. We reach out to our own associates that work for us to give feedback. We test our own gear. And, you know, men and women have different bodies and different physiology, and they use gear differently. And so that gear has to meet a woman's needs in the outdoors for it to be something that she's going to want to buy. So, yeah, the pink it and shrink it days are long gone. And now, you know, women can get the same kind of gear that men can get from all of these great vendors that we sell in our store.
Are you making a concerted effort then to only deal with vendors who are able to supply both good quality women's equipment and men's, or are you How has that affected the buying that REI is doing?
Yeah, it's a great question. And for example, we got in a couple of new vendors this year, Vuori and Caton, that are outstanding. They're authentic. They've been around a long time. They make great gear, but they only make it for men. And so REI does work with those vendors and, you know, says, hey, we really want to be representative of both genders. And so Vuori is coming out with a new line for women. You know, Caton's vice president was in our store about a month ago, and we had the same discussion with him. And so if we have a vendor that doesn't make both men's and women's, we do try to make sure that they know our concerns, that that we want both represented.
I can tell you from my own experience that, you know, just the the plethora of stuff that's really not practical, outdoor apparel, you know, that seems to, in a lot of shops, you go to the women's section and there are dresses that are, they're cute, but they're not something I would wear for a hike, or I would wear supping, or I would wear, you know, doing any of the other things that I would, biking. And so it almost seemed like for the longest time, you know, there would be gear for men and apparel that was, you know, to be used, you know, actively outside, and then the women's section was just this frilly stuff. And so it's been really fun to see some of that changes, some of that change in the last little bit. So can you give us a quick rundown on some of the outfitters that you think are specifically, I mean, you mentioned a couple that were previously men only and are now bringing in women's stuff, but are there some other ones that have been pretty good about supplying good quality equipment and apparel for women all along?
Yeah, and especially for women in Minnesota, because, you know, we have quite a strong Nordic population here.
Right.
That's, you know, one of the tallest states in the country. And so getting things like longer inseams or for women who, you know, need plus sizes has been a challenge in the past. And we've had some great support from our vendors, Prana being a huge one. Cool is another. Lucy making, you know, extended sizes of activewear have all been great partners in making extended sizes. And then you end up, you know, in markets like San Francisco, for example, that need lots of clothing for petites. And they've done just as good a job on that end of the spectrum, so that we're kind of meeting the needs for the whole spectrum of body types out there so that they can get clothing going into the outdoors. It's been really cool.
Right. And, you know, I mean, there's been so much written about the obesity problem in this country, and yet there wasn't activewear for people who wanted to do something about that, you know, by getting out and exercising more. So it's really encouraging that they're extending those sizes for people who want to get out and enjoy the outdoors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't tell you how many times I've had, you know, women coming through my line if I'm bringing on a register and they're finding clothing that fits their body. And it's not necessarily that, you know, that we need clothes for people who are obese. It's just a lot of times the clothing in our industry, and I would say the whole industry of retail apparel, just doesn't fit women's bodies correctly and that the sizing is so out of whack. You know, where you might find a size 10 that fits you perfectly, you know, and another size 10 you can't get over your thighs, and then another size 10 you're swimming in, you know. And
exactly.
So there's so much inconsistency, especially on the women's side in, you know, the apparel industry. So we really appreciated how willing our vendor partners have been to work with us on sizing in particular. And we've obviously hit a nerve, because I get so much positive feedback from our female customers, thing. I finally am able to find things that fit my body that I can get outside in.
Mm-hmm. So you launched this in late March, I understand. So how's it been received so far? Have you gotten any pushback, or have people just been rejoicing? What's your experience been so far?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that obviously most of the rejoicing has come on the women's side, which is great, because that's the group we're trying to get to. And it has been interesting, you know, that we have gotten a little bit of pushback from, you know, some of the men in our community, which is kind of them saying, well, you know, you're putting all these women in your advertisements and it's women first, and all of this is a women's movement, you know, where's ours? And my response has been, you know, yours has always been there and it still is. You know, if you're a white male, you have been represented really well, you know, over the last 100 years. So don't worry about it. This is us trying to, again, get to a level playing field. And if that means that we're putting more resources into the women's programs to get them, you know, where they've always needed to be, you know, I'm fine having that conversation. And generally, you know, when I have it with them, they sort of see the light and they're like, yeah, you're right. You know, I get it.
Mm-hmm. So I was also reading, there's a little section in here that talked about your CEO, Jerry Stritzke, who in one of his first acts after becoming CEO, he launched a five-year, $1.5 million effort with Camber Outdoors that sparked women's innovation and leadership in the outdoor industry. What is Camber Outdoors? Tell us a little more about that. And what's that? How has that gone?
Yeah, Camber Outdoors used to be the OIWC, the Outdoor Industry Women's Coalition. You didn't need to be a woman to join. In fact, I was a member, and I'm a member of Camber as well. So it's just for people that that believe that we need more women in leadership positions in the outdoor industry. And so there's several things that Camber does. They make sure that they are promoting women into leader positions. So, you know, they will have an active mentorship program, for example. Like one of my managers that just went and took our Dillon, Colorado store, she is now an active mentor for other women who are out there in the retail industry and trying to get into leadership roles. And then Camber is just very active as far as getting to girls, especially, and getting them into the outdoors. So they're active in finding groups across the country, just like we are. That really have a focus on getting girls and young women into the outdoors and comfortable doing these sports and activities.
Mm-hmm. And finding people, you know, a community that they can do these things with, you know, so that they can feel safe, I would imagine, and feel like there's other people, you know, that they can do things with. Sometimes it's not.
Yeah,
it's not easy.
Absolutely.
Always. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like us to know about?
No, I think that's about it. I mean, certainly if you go to that Force of Nature page, it will also put you in touch with all of our local and national partners. So it's not just REI kind of leading the way. We've got a lot of other vendors and organizations and nonprofits who are jumping on board with this. So that's the good thing about being a big company like we are now, is that we can kind of influence other companies to do good work as well. So you go on that page and you will find links to all those guys as well.
Awesome. And so are you feeling like these efforts are for gender equality will continue past 2017? Is this something that's going to be a long-term effort?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that Jerry made really clear when we launched this, is that this is not something that's just for 2017. It's not an initiative. It's, you know, not a campaign. This is something that we really believe in. We're investing heavily in. It's something that we've, like I mentioned before, like we've been doing for several, many years anyway, all the way back to 1938. If you want to start with our founder, Mary Anderson, who just recently passed away, I think at 105, you know, we've had women in key positions that believe that a woman's place is in the outdoors. So we're just continuing on with that tradition.
That was Brian Harrow, Bloomington, Minnesota REI flagship store manager, speaking with WTIP's C.J. Heidoff. And REI commissioned a national study on women in the outdoors that was released with the announcement of Force of Nature. The study found that although more than 85% of all women surveyed believe the outdoors positively affects mental health, physical health, happiness, and overall well-being, and 70% reported that being outdoors is liberating, there are obstacles, as 63% of women said they could not think of an outdoor female role model, and 6 in 10 women say that men's interests in outdoor activities are taken more seriously than women's. Military families move a lot, and that makes it difficult for service members' spouses to hold steady jobs. And about half of military spouses are either unemployed or underemployed, and that can take a toll on their families, their earning power, and the economy. Sarah Harris reports from Watertown, New York.
When Ann Schoens describes her career, she uses the word imagine a lot. In college, Schoens studied music education.
I had always imagined myself being a music teacher. When my husband joined the Army, I spent our first duty station getting a post-baccalaureate teacher certification for Texas.
But Jones and her husband didn't stay in Texas. He was transferred to another base, and her career as a teacher didn't take off. Jones tried other jobs. She even joined the Army herself for a while. She has a master's in adult educational technology, and she's on the job market in Watertown. But at 30, with two young daughters and a husband who's still in the military, it's been a challenge to establish a civilian career.
I'm kind of trying to imagine maybe becoming a human resources training and developer so I can utilize my education background. But I don't have a lot of versatility in what I can do just based on the location that I end up in.
Shone's husband will be transferred to Fort Lee, Virginia this winter, and that's left her in a tough spot. Should she get a short-term job, or should she wait another 6 months until they move?
You don't have those connections that help you find jobs. You're at the bottom of the list for childcare. You have all these structural problems that are impeding you from getting going.
That's Kathy Roth Duque, CEO of Blue Star Families, a military family advocacy group. She says Shone's story is not uncommon among military spouses, the vast majority of whom are women. According to the RAND Corporation, military spouses are about 1.5 times more likely to be unemployed than their civilian counterparts, and spouses that do have jobs are often underemployed. Roth Duque says it costs the U.S. economy approximately $1 billion a year in lost wages and spending. And it places a big burden on military families.
We're asking people to sacrifice twice. We're asking them to sacrifice by risking their lives, or asking them to sacrifice by having half the household income that their neighbor has. And that's too much to ask.
Hi, Sarah.
Nice to meet you, Liza.
Nice to meet you. These are my kids.
Hey, guys.
Entrepreneur and Watertown military spouse Liza Rodewald was already working from home as a software developer when her husband joined the Army. When they moved to Fort Campbell, Kentucky for his job, she noticed something about the women in her new neighborhood.
They were highly educated. We had architects and accountants, and they were struggling with employment because they had moved so many times.
So when a friend asked her if she wanted to help start a military spouse job site, she jumped at the chance. Together, they co-founded Hire Mad Skills, a company that places military spouses in remote jobs so they can work from home and keep their jobs when they move.
And you know, as an employer, if you're trying to hire somebody, you need somebody who can roll with it, who can jump right in. And military spouses, just by default, are like that because they're just thrown into situations.
This past year, Hire Mad Skills placed 75 military spouses in remote jobs in fields like IT, sales, and marketing. Rodewald says it's a start. But both she and Blue Star Family CEO Kathy Roth Duque say really fixing the military spouse employment issue requires policy change, like making it easier to transfer professional licenses from state to state. That won't come fast enough for people like Ann Shones. For now, Shones is enrolled in a human resources training program at Fort Drum. She's put her resume on Hire Mad Skills and beefed up her LinkedIn profile. And she's hoping for the best.
I am leaving myself very open, but I'm also trying to develop my soft skills as much as I can to be ready when the opportunity comes.
She hopes that opportunity will come soon, maybe as a remote job. That way, another military move won't stop her from building her career. I'm Sarah Harris in Watertown, New York.
This story was produced by the American Homefront Project, a public media collaboration that reports on American military life and veterans. Chile's Constitutional Court recently upheld a measure that would end the country's absolute ban on abortions. The court's 6-4 vote accepted the constitutionality of a measure to legalize abortions when a woman's life is in danger, when a fetus is not viable, and in cases of rape. President Michelle Bachelet said she would sign the measure that passed Congress in August. It will end Chile's stance as the last country in South America to ban abortion in all cases. Bachelet, a physician and former head of UN Women, said, quote, "Today women have won, democracy has won, all of Chile has won. The decision cannot be appealed." Chile legalized abortion for medical reasons in 1931, but the procedure was then banned under all circumstances in 1989 during the dictatorship of General Augusto Pinochet. Women found guilty of having abortions now face prison terms of up to 5 years. Still, thousands of illegal abortions are performed every year, and most involve black market purchases of a drug to end first trimester pregnancies. Those who can afford it sometimes seek abortions in neighboring Argentina or beyond. Chile is one of four countries that currently prohibits abortion in all cases, and that's according to the New York-based Center for Reproductive Rights, though a few others have rules so restrictive that they amount to de facto bans. Pregnant women in treatment for opioid addiction often face difficulties finding a doctor to prescribe them the medication they need to have a healthy pregnancy. Side Effects Public Media reporter Emily Foreman learned that unfounded fears are driving some doctors to drop their patients.
Every other week, Cassidy Lindmeyer carpools with her friend Lisa to their OBGYN in Indianapolis.
Too late to turn left.
When I call, they're sitting in traffic.
You just came from your appointment?
Yep.
How long is this drive?
And for us, from Seymour, it's about an hour. With traffic, it's about an hour and 20 minutes.
They drive this far because they can't find a doctor nearby that will prescribe addiction medicine and take Medicaid.
Like, there's doctors in Seymour, and they're like, cash only. This is Lisa. That shouldn't be the case. If you're trying to help yourself, then they should help you help yourself.
They drive far for a medication called buprenorphine. It curbs cravings. Cassidy says combined with therapy, it's helped her stop using, hold down a job, take care of her kids.
As long as it's taken the way it's supposed to be taken and treated the way it's supposed to be treated, it's an amazing thing.
But when Cassidy got pregnant, it got even harder to find a provider who would treat her.
I've never went through so much hassle to, you know, get something that I need that my doctor agrees that I need, you know.
She had been going to a doctor in Bloomington, about an hour away. He prescribed her buprenorphine. Then Cassidy got pregnant. She told her doctor, and he gave her a 2-week supply of Subutex. It's a version of buprenorphine for pregnancy. And he told Cassidy, since he's not an obstetrician,
He said, I'm going to have to discharge you. You're going to have to find a new doctor.
Can you do that? Drop your patient when they get pregnant? What if Cassidy had run out? It only takes hours for withdrawal symptoms to set in. She might have relapsed and exposed her baby to infection or overdosed. Luckily, Cassidy found an OBGYN in Indianapolis who will prescribe her buprenorphine.
If I had my way, whatever doctors were taking care of them before would continue to take care of them.
Dr. Tara Benjamin runs a clinic in Indianapolis where Cassidy will deliver her baby. Dr. Benjamin says a few years ago, more and more patients started showing up addicted to prescription pain pills and heroin.
What happened was, is we started getting patients coming into us saying, I was on Subutex and my doctor cut me off and I don't know what to do.
Dr. Benjamin is the only OBGYN in Indiana who will treat up to 100 patients with addiction. Most physicians limit it to 30, but she manages the load, linking patients with a social worker, therapy, transportation to the clinic. And she says, no, you can't just stop prescribing once they're pregnant. At the very least, you're supposed to provide care for 6 weeks.
Like, stopping it is the worst thing you could do.
Here's a point that Cassidy's former doctor seemed to miss. You don't need to be an obstetrician to prescribe buprenorphine to pregnant women. You do need a waiver to prescribe it, but he had it. Any doctor with this waiver can write for these women. So why don't they?
A lot of physicians become fearful in that situation because they're not fully educated or they don't understand how these patients should be managed.
Dr. Lewis Baxter helped shape national guidelines for how buprenorphine should be prescribed. He says as long as their patient has an OBGYN that's aware they're taking Subutex, they can keep prescribing.
The fear that some prescribers have is really unfounded. There is very little risk.
In total, Cassidy went to 3 doctors before she found Dr. Benjamin's clinic in Indianapolis. The first fired her, the second refused to treat her, and the third didn't prescribe buprenorphine.
But at the same time, you know, like, I got to hear her heartbeat today, so I know she's okay, and I got to see her a few days ago, and everything's fine, but, I mean, I just hate for that to happen to anybody else.
She's thankful she had enough of a supply to fill in the gaps. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Emily Foreman.
This story was produced by Side Effects Public Media, a news collaborative covering public health. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1467.